You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Jessica Backus. Jessica, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks for having me, Brainerd.
So, Jessica, you're in New York now. Can you tell us a little bit about Artsy and your role at Artsy before we get into a specific project?
Yeah, sure. So Artsy is a website to discover, learn about, and collect art online. And we launched to the public in October 2012. And my role at Artsy is, so I've been here for a while now. Gosh, it's been almost 5 years. And I lead up this thing called the Art Genome Project, which is really part of this like greater learning initiative, as we call it at Artsy. And basically, what the Art Genome Project is it's a vocabulary for art, so what we might call the controlled vocabulary. And I work with a team of experts and art historians and artists, and we use this vocabulary to research and annotate all of the artists and works on the site. And what that does in turn is it creates sort of a, you know, dynamic browsing experience, what we like to call the first art recommendation engine out there.
So it's an algorithm that's being created that's tied to a whole series of keywords. I mean, it's probably more complex than you're saying, right?
Yeah, totally. Well, right. So there is also this level of the website, the engineering, the algorithm that sits on top of it. But I think as our head of engineering has said before, you know, the math is actually like much simpler than what we can call the data that the art historians create. So in other words, really, you know, like 99% of the work is the work that we do creating this vocabulary and then the work we do researching artists and annotating them. That data then does, you know, it's structured data, as we call it, because, again, we have, you know, this set of about 1,000 terms, which are really the characteristics of art. Those go into kind of, we call it like a bag of words approach, and then those words are used to match certain artworks to other artworks. And so, yes, right at that point is where a computer algorithm comes in that says, like, okay, what are the most important, you know, terms attached to this artist? And when we say important, really that is decided by the genomer, the person who does the research, because they can kind of rank the importance of these terms. But so the algorithm looks at that. It says, what is the most important term here? Let me look at the rank. And then I'll match those words to other words that are associated with an artist or an artwork. And then, you know, return to you, the user, a set of similar artworks or artists based on what you're looking at. And I should actually say that this is, we actually use like an off-the-shelf algorithm for this. It's a pretty standard thing that is, you know, used in a lot of different places for information retrieval.
Is it the same way, for example, and pardon me if it's not this at all, but like the way Netflix or something suggests a movie based on a movie you watched, based on a director, or based on something like that?
Yeah, exactly. That's a really good analogy. And Netflix, too, you know, they have a whole team of their, I don't know what they call them, their analysts, I think, who actually, you know, watch all of the programs and the movies, and they annotate them also according to their vocabulary. And then the algorithm ultimately is what does the matching. But, you know, at this point, those are standard algorithms that are kind of off the shelf. The real, you know, the real work and the real, I think, innovation, if I had to say it, comes on the side of the art historians who are actually coming up with what terms to use, what terms are relevant, you know, what actually say something about a work of art and what will create meaningful connections, and then being able to analyze a work of art or an artist based on that. And you know, for us, I think that with art, it's worth noting that it is, and this really goes without saying, but it involves a pretty like high level of decision making. You know, we have we really do focus on modern and contemporary art, and so a lot of the terms associated with modern and contemporary art tend to be very conceptual. So we have concepts that we catalog, and they range from everything from like art that's about obsolescence or nostalgia to art that's about architecture's effects. I think of like Rachel White Reed here. You know, this kind of almost Foucaultian interest in the way that the built environment mediates social relationships. So like that is a kind of idea that we catalog, and our genomers are on the lookout for artists who might, you know, have that as a focal point of their practice. And those are the kinds of decisions that we're making, you know, on a daily basis.
Well, that sounds kind of, I mean, straightforward in one way. Now, of course, what I'm dying to know is what are those 1,000 words, you know, that you've collected?
I'll just list them out here, starting from A to Z.
I mean, the algorithm, like you say, may be off the shelf, but those, right, of course, we probably can't say do that on radio, but I mean, it is that's the question that it seems to beg. What are those 1,000 words? And as the kind of curators, in a sense, of those words, which I know are pulled from historians, mm-hmm. but it begins to be some kind of structure in itself. And
mm-hmm.
yeah, so maybe something about the ranking of the importance of those words. I mean, can you talk about some of those words? Are they all tend to be descriptive terms or?
Yeah, totally. No, that's a really good question. So, you know, we try to think of like, you said the word structure, right? And that's very much what we are. You know, we're a framework, as we call it. And I like to say that, you know, we're only one of an infinite number of possible art genome projects. The only difference between us and those other possible ones is that we actually exist. But we've kind of set up the framework, and I think that's really, like, in many ways, kind of the heart of the Art Genome Project. And we can iterate on that. We can add new terms. We can take them away. So I don't know if this is, like, necessarily that interesting, but I can dive into some more specifics. But, you know, our framework...
Well, yeah, because one of the things, I mean, you can dive into what you're about to say if you want, because one of the things that brings up for me is, I mean, that's clear what you're saying, but I'm kind of wondering, is there, like you're saying, there could be other systems, but so is there cultural bias within this system, you know, that you guys have created? I know you're obviously trying to avoid that, or other biases that we're not even thinking of that are, you know, gender specific or something else that's not as, you know, trendy as everything that I'm saying.
Right. Oh, no, totally. I mean, that is definitely the case. Like, we do definitely have our biases. You know, in fact, we kind of did set up the system saying, like, okay, there are actually a lot of other controlled vocabularies out there. Like, the Getty Art and Architecture Thesaurus is probably the standard one that most registrars or art catalogers would use. But it has 140,000 terms in it. And so we took a really different approach. You know, we wanted to take what we call a user-centered approach. It's highly curated. You know, we think about what is interesting, not just what is factual about a work of art, like, you know, the Getty might, but really what is interesting and what's going to make interesting connections. So that's kind of number one. And that, of course, is going to include biases, namely the biases of what we think are relevant and interesting. You know, the second is that we specialize...
Right, which, wait, I want you to go on to the second, but that's such a powerful point, because it's, like you're saying, if there are biases there, it's within... And this is such a crucial question for art, what you think is interesting,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is based on what? Other historians or people who have different relationships to the field of art, right? It's subjective.
Yeah, it is subjective. You know, as a practical matter, a lot of the times where this comes in is sort of in asking, like, what, you know, what, like, mediums and techniques are in the vocabulary. So, for example, we've been debating recently if we want to add categories for additive and subtractive sculpture making. So we have more specific categories, of course. We have, like, we're talking about adding welding right now. We have carving. We have, you know, porcelain, open form sculpture, a lot of different ways of making sculpture. But we're wondering, like, would it be relevant to add kind of an umbrella category for all additive sculpture making techniques and all subtractive ones? And this is actually one that exists in the Getty, for example, is they have a bunch of processes, you know, like a list of 200.
Right, but you're trying to winnow that down. You're like you were saying, your paradigm is different. You have 1,000 terms, and you're carefully pruning those, not just adding them on.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, in the end, we decided that we're actually not going to add this distinction, because it, you know, it adds like another layer that our researchers have to think of. And we also really question whether or not that's something that brings a lot of value to users. You know, I think it is relevant, certainly, if something is maybe cast or molded, or if you can see the welding, or if you can see the joints from the welding. But it's probably not that relevant to most users that it's a subtractive method, say.
Very interesting. So this is part of your role there in this project is the kind of management and in a sense curation of these vocabularies and how the vocabularies grows?
Sort of. You know, I don't do the curation myself. We have a very democratic approach for that. My approach is really kind of like, you know, and I should also mention my predecessor here, Matthew Israel, who did a lot of, you know, setting up the initial framework for it. And I've been kind of iterating on that to basically come up with kind of a set of, you know, operating procedures and a set of rules within which anyone on the team can operate. And so the way it works, actually, if someone wants to propose a gene, so the genes are the specific categories of art, they can propose it on this, we have it's a Trello board, it's like a work management app, and then everyone on the team votes yay or nay, and if it gets a certain number of votes, then we add it to labs, which is kind of a separate feature of the genoming user interface. We'll test it out for a little bit, and if we can agree with about 80% consistency on its application, then it graduates to become a fully-fledged part of the Art Genome Project. And if something fails to graduate, then maybe it'll get workshopped by the person who proposed it initially. Maybe we'll try it out again. Usually it revolves around, you know, just having to refine your ideas. So an example of that right now is we're kind of debating how to add this gene for, like, hermetic closed cyclical systems. So we're thinking here both of, like, artists who maybe recycle their own works in their works, like Kadar Brock, but then also, like, these hermetic systems like Hans Hacke's condensation cube. And so it's a big question there, like, are those similar, are they not, are those different concepts are similar, how do we refine that? And so that's a gene that's kind of been bouncing around on our, you know, proposals Trello board for a bit as we try to refine it and see what it might and might not apply to.
Well, and like almost creating a thesaurus, the vocabulary that you're creating, and as you say, more circles of this could be done, but it's also directly contributing to the larger conversation, the global conversation of how art is categorized, talked about, and sorted, isn't it?
We certainly hope so. We really do. You know, and in fact, we do spend a good amount of time, you know, writing about this process, maybe not as much as we'd like, but we do kind of have a blog, and we write frequent posts about, you know, the perils and the joys of categorization. You know, we wrote one in like 2015 on the 10 most difficult works to categorize. And oftentimes those are the most interesting. So I think that, you know, I think that we have like kind of a healthy relationship with the, you know, the potential of the Art Genome Project, but also its failings. And I think I like to say that we have to sort of normalize failure on our team because, you know, we have so many ideas and they can't all go out there into the world. And we kind of revel in, you know, the fact that we can't actually ever 100% classify everything to our full satisfaction.
Right, it's an ongoing process.
Yeah, exactly.
And so to step back a little bit then, so this is the Art Genome Project, and that's kind of fascinating in the dialogue it's creating. And then there's Artsy, and it's which is, you know, a larger platform where people are looking at contemporary art, and it's a commercial model. And so this conversation about the Art Genome is also feeding the larger successful commercial model of Artsy, right?
It is and it isn't. I think that, you know, the genome ultimately does. You know, we have, for example, if you're on Artsy and you want to look at artworks, we have this sort of, you know, sophisticated filtering page where you can drill down and, you know, explore genes that, you know, either, you know, genomers have added. So things like still life or art about technology or geometric abstraction. And so, yeah, of course, that fuels directly into our bottom line. You know, can users use the Art Genome Project to find what they want to look at, learn about, but ultimately also buy? And I, you know, we also are, you know, we can make user recommendations as well. If you like a number of things on Artsy, we can suggest other things that you might like. I will say that in terms of these art historical questions, you know, our product team and our sales team, they don't have the bandwidth to really ask themselves those questions, and it's not really ever something that's actually come up, in the sense that there would be kind of, I don't really even know how, say, our COO would be able to exert pressure on us to say, like, I don't like your category for architecture's effects. You know, I think you need to do X, Y, Z. So, yeah, I think that, you know, the former head of Google Cultural Institute, I think, said something really interesting when we were just having a conversation about sort of how to create art metadata. And I think he was just like, you know, the product is going to follow from the content, you know, meaning that you kind of need people who understand the art to start with it and to identify what's relevant, and then to create systems and frameworks around that that can sort of turn that, you know, the messiness of art into structured data. And then you have product teams who are going to work with the data that they have. And, you know, it's maybe not 100% separation of church and state here at Artsy between our product team and the Art Genome Project team. But by and large, especially when it comes to the curatorial questions, those are all entirely in our purview.
So that's great. That's clear. And you know, it's grown so fast and so quickly that one thing I'm curious about, and I guess you have insights into it too, because I interview different dealers from around the world, different artists. I just interviewed Rob Green, who gave me a very dark picture of what he thought the economy was like. That, you know, in the art world, that, you know, he sold less, closed his galleries. Now he's in finance, but said, and this was all in the interview, so it's fine to discuss. And he was saying, you know, that even the bigger galleries are reaching further back, and that this is something that nobody talks about because of all, you know, and so no one else has really, I've talked to a lot of art advisors too, who all seem like everything is great. At Artsy, does it also seem like the economy is good for art, or better or worse, or changing, or do you have any sense of that?
Yeah, no, it's a good question, you know, and we are very much like part of the art ecosystem. You know, we work with about 4,000 galleries, and there are almost 700 museums on Artsy. So for sure, you know, if, you know, and galleries pay monthly subscription fees to be on the platform. They use it to sell their art. And if they suffer, then we do too. We are here ultimately to also provide them a service, you know, in the form of sales, but also software. So I guess I would say that It does seem like the online art market is increasing, even if the art market at large might be decreasing. There's actually a recent report by Hiscox and Art Tactic. They put out this sort of annual online art trade report. And I don't know the numbers exactly off the top of my head, but it was something like 20 to 25% or so was the growth in the online art market in 2015. I think that is promising. It's still a relatively small sector of the total art market. It went from like $2 billion, $2.5 billion to like $3.5 billion. And the, you know, global art market is about $60 billion or so. So we're still a small piece of the puzzle, but I do think that that sector is growing.
But is there a limit to what can be sold online, do you think? I mean, any painting, sculpture, installation conceivably could be sold online? Is there a limit to the platform?
That's a good question. I think we're still discovering it. I mean, I do know that we host on the site, we have everything from prehistoric art up through art of the present. We have digital art, you know, painting, sculpture, performance art. And I am pretty sure that we've sold something in every category you know, from digital through whether it's jewelry from our design galleries or performance art, video art. And we also did, like last year, we sort of launched our commercial auctions with Sotheby's. We did a like special curated auction with them called Input Output, and it was some digital art as well as art that was about technology. So I do think that, you know, the online audience, they tend to be, you know, a little bit younger. They grew up with digital technologies. I think that they, you know, understand that art isn't just like painting on a wall for over your couch. And I think that they're kind of curious to learn more about it and find a site where they can sort of see the whole expanse of the art world.
Right, because it's changing. It is, for one, it is changing rapidly. I mean, it's just nice. I mean, I really didn't want to get any, wasn't meaning to ask any specifics on even economics or sales, but that the picture is cheery from Archie's point of view. I mean, as it is for many other professionals that I talked to, was really the kind of overtone of what I'm asking. And it sounds like it is, because the Art Genome Project is, you know, also an aspect of it that sounds, you know, very healthy, for lack of a better word. You know what I mean? That's kind of enriching to art culture. And like you say, part of the global conversation, potentially. It is.
Yeah. Thank you. No, and that is very much our approach. You know, I think we've invested a lot in content. I consider the Art Genome Project part of our content strategy at large. You know, I think we know, like, long-term, if we want this to work, you can't just, like, aggregate all of the art online and expect people to buy it. You know, more and more, especially a younger generation, they're actually buying art because they want to have an emotional connection to it, and it follows that they need to learn about it somewhere. And if they're not doing that necessarily in person in the gallery, but connecting with the gallery online, then somebody else needs to provide that context. And so, you know, we do invest heavily in content. We have our entire, you know, content business, our editorial team that writes something like 100 unique pieces a month. We have the Art Genome Project. We've written something like 9,000 artist bios that we just wrote in-house. So we're just slowly but surely also building up an encyclopedic resource.
Right, that is what's exciting. And in this encyclopedic resource, it'll always be online. I mean, speaking of archives, now that this is becoming, you know, such a component of a kind of historic dialogue, is it all digital? How's it all backed up? Is there any printouts of all this? Any books? You know what I mean? Because that's part of like a...
It is digital. You can actually follow us on GitHub, which is sort of like it's like Google Docs for engineers, kind of. It's where a lot of people store their code base. And we do actually have certain parts of the site are open source. So we have something like 25,000 downloadable images that are in the public domain, and all of the like genomes that we've created for those, along with additional metadata, is all available via our open access API. So I know like you might need to have like a little bit of technical knowledge, but I don't know, you know, if you know someone like under 20, they might be able to kind of help you tap into that and do something useful with the data. And also the Art Genome Project vocabulary and all of the definitions we've written for these concepts, that's also all available in a much like easier format in GitHub. So we are
That's a good thing to just be clear about, because that was kind of one of the questions at the beginning. You said all the information from the Art Genome Project, and one of the things is those 1,000 words. I know I'm not the only one that's going to be listening to this thinking, what are those 1,000 words?
Okay.
Is there a way they can actually access those and download them? And if so, what is that way?
There are. Okay, so there's two ways. So you can just go to artsy.net/categories, and you will see all of them there. There's 1,000 of them. Again, artsy.net/categories. Also, if you want to, probably the easiest way to find it is if you just Google like the Art Genome Project and GitHub, that's GitHub, what you'll find there is our repository that includes all of the categories, along with a little bit additional information. So again, we write these like encyclopedic definitions for them. So So just the Art Genome Project GitHub, it'll take you to the repository.
That's great. And there'll be links to, in this interview as well to that. In closing, this is just the question I've been asking lately. Is there a book you've been reading, could be on topic or off topic, that you want to share with us, or a blog?
Oh, sure. I'm happy to share. It's totally off topic, but I'm guessing it's something that's going to resonate with a lot of your listeners. It's Elena Ferrante, the Neapolitan novels, which are, it's like a total of 2,000 pages or something, and I just could not put them down. So amazing. Elena Ferrante.
Thanks so much. It's really, I'm really glad you mentioned that. It's been a pleasure talking with you. I really appreciate the work you're doing, and I just want to thank you for talking with me today.
Oh, of course. Thanks so much. It's my pleasure.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.